Chapter 15. Fi'ir had asked for 2 hours to get Lantano Garawashi's sword out of Ezra's wood. He had no idea how much of that time had passed. In fact, he couldn't remember how he'd come here. He looked up at the towering sequoias stretching to the sky. Well, at least he knew where he was. He was definitely in Ezra's wood. He looked at his hands. Both of them were scraped, and his knees hurt, as if he'd fallen. He touched his nose and could tell it had been broken, and then set properly. There was still crusty, dried blood on his upper lip. Dorian had told him stories about men who'd taken a blow to the head and forgot themselves, either forgetting everything before the blow, or more commonly, completely losing the ability to remember anything at all after the blow. They could meet a person, the person would walk out of the room, and 5 minutes later, return and be greeted as a stranger once more. For several moments, Fi'ir felt a panic rising inside him at the very thought. But aside from his nose, his head didn't feel as if he'd taken a blow. He could remember leaving Lantano Garawashi. He could remember approaching the vast bubble of magics that surrounded Ezra's wood. And he could remember the turmoil within those magics as, miles to the east, the Lee Nought had entered the wood and been trapped within it. Fi'ir had used that turmoil as a distraction for his own attempt. But from that point, he could remember nothing. He was facing the bubble now, as if he was leaving. He took a few more steps, disoriented, and came around the trunk of another giant sequoia. Before him, not 50 paces away, just outside the magic, were Lantano Garawashi and, oddly, Antoninus Wervel.
"Maybe I have gone mad." Antoninus Wervel was a red mage, and of the most powerful and most intelligent men to walk the halls of Shosendi in decades. He was a fat Modaini man, and he'd been a casual friend for years. To see him sitting awkwardly, cross-legged beside Lantano Garawashi, who sat as gracefully as he did everything, was surreal. Then the men saw Fi'ir, and both rose. Antoninus called something out, but though he was only 40 paces away now, Fi'ir couldn't hear him. Fi'ir walked straight to the wall of magic. Whatever clever magic he'd used to get into the wood, it obviously hadn't been clever enough. He was alive only by the forbearance of whatever it was that lived here. So Fi'ir walked straight through the magic. It slid around him, and for a moment, he could swear something in the wood felt amused. Then he was out.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked Antoninus Wervel. Antoninus laughed.
"You escape the wood, something no mage has done in 7 centuries, and you ask what I'm doing?"
"Do you have my sword?"
Garawashi demanded. Fi'ir was carrying a pack strapped to his back that he hadn't been carrying when he entered the wood.
"Him first," he said.
Antoninus lifted his cold eyebrows, but said,
"I came with a delegation from Shosendi to recover Kurok. After the Battle of Pavil's Grove, the delegation turned back. They were sure that if Kurok had been present in such a desperate battle with so many magi and meisters present, that someone would have tried to use it. No one did. So they decided to backtrack and follow other leads. The truth is, I don't think Lord Lucius trusts everyone in our delegation. He and I don't care for each other, but he knows where my loyalties lie, so he released me. So now it's your turn, Fi'ir. Did you recover Sior Celestos?" The Modaini was too damn smart, Fi'ir could tell that the man had put together Fi'ir, who'd held one nearly mythical sword, with the apprentice of another nearly mythical sword, and found no coincidence. Fi'ir opened the pack. There was a note inside with directions and instructions, written awkwardly, as if the hand writing it had been writing in an unfamiliar language. Fi'ir read it quickly, and remembered bits and pieces of what had happened in the wood. Setting the note aside, he pulled a hilt out of his pack. A hilt only, with no sword. It was a perfect replica of the one on Sior Celestos, and it would fit Lantano Garawashi's sheath perfectly. As long as the Sa-Siurai didn't draw his sword, no one would ever know.
"What is this?"
Lantano Garawashi demanded.
"It's 3 months," Fi'ir said.
"What?"
Garawashi asked.
"That's the time I need," Fi'ir said. "I'm a maker, Garawashi, and I received instructions in the wood. A prophecy left by Ezra himself, centuries ago. If you prefer death, I will be your second. But if you want to live, take this hilt. Antoninus and I will go to Black Barrow and do things no one has done since Ezra's time. I will make Sior Celestos for you by spring. Or at least a damn good fake. You can be the king you've always wished to be."
Lantano Garawashi stood for a long moment, eyes hot and then cold, trapped between his desires and his honor. He swallowed.
"You swear you will bring me my Sioros?"
"I swear it."
Lantano Garawashi took the hilt. Logan and Kylar rode at the head of Logan's 500 horse and 900 foot. Logan's bodyguards rode 10 paces back, giving them privacy. The sharpened-toothed simpleton, Nasher, rode in his usual spot beside Logan, but he didn't care what they might say. He just liked to be close. Kylar unrolled a worn letter.
"What you got?" Logan asked.
Kylar gave him an inscrutable look, shrugged, and handed it to him. In small, tight handwriting, it said,
"Hey, I thought it was my last one, too. He said I got one more for old time's sake. He might even have been telling the truth. Be careful who you love. Don't follow prophecies. Don't let them use you to bring the High King. Your secret is your most important possession. You're more important than I ever was, kid. Maybe for all those years I was just holding it for you. Make no deals with the wolf."
"I assume this means something to you?" Logan said.
"Not all of it," Kylar said.
"Who's the wolf?"
Logan asked. "Someone I made a deal with right before I found that letter."
"Ouch."
"And the High King?" Kylar grimaced. "That was part I was hoping you could help me with." Logan thought.
"There was a High King who held Cenaria and several other countries, maybe 400 years ago. But Cenaria has been held by lots of different countries in the last 1,000 years. Sounds like an Ursul thing. They're the only ones in Midcryu in a position to rule over other kings. I'd guess they're dredging up a prophecy to give themselves legitimacy."
"Is the secret what I think it is?" Logan asked.
"Here we are," Kylar said. They had circled Ezra's wood, looking for signs of the Li Nought. Kylar said it was something Logan needed to see for himself. 50 paces away, Logan saw a wall of dead men, hundreds of them, pressed against an invisible barrier, trying to escape the forest. In places, bodies were piled 20 feet deep
as men had clambered over the dead, hoping to reach the top of the invisible wall. There was no movement. No one was merely injured. Every body had been mangled, torn with sharp claws that must have had godlike strength. Helmets had been crushed flat. Heads were simply missing. Swords had been snapped like twigs. Even the horses were dead, heads torn off, sinews ripped through the skin. Some muscles snapped instead of torn. For as far as the eye could see into the sequoias, there was only devastation, and as far as the eye could see west and east, Li Naught were pressed against an invisible wall. They'd tested every place they could before dying, and found it everywhere impregnable. Gore still drained from the bodies, sliding against the wall like glass, but strangely, there was no smell. The magic sealed in even the air. Logan heard vomiting from his bodyguards. The villagers of Taurus Bend say someone tries to go into the wood every generation. It happens so much that their term for suicide is walking into the wood, Kylar said. Logan turned. Kylar's eyes were hollow, stricken. I did this, Kylar said. I lured them here so they'd fall into the Sioran's trap instead of you. These souls are on my tab. Our scouts heard the fighting. That's why we held back. What you did here saved 1,400 lives. At the cost of 5,000. And maybe saved Cenaria. Logan stopped. It wasn't making a dent. Captain, he said. Bring the men forward in groups. I want everyone to see this. I don't want any Cenarian to ever make the mistake we almost did. Caldrosa Wynne saluted, obviously glad to be given a duty to take her away from the massacre. Logan changed tack. Kylar, I know you think you're a bad man, but I've never seen anyone who will go to the lengths you will to do what you've decided is right. You are an amazingly moral man, and I trust you. And you're my best friend. Logan looked steadily at Kylar, to let him read the truth. Kylar gave a sarcastic, "You can't be serious," grimace, that slowly melted. The tension left his face as the truth sank in. Logan meant every word. Kylar blinked suddenly. Once. Twice. And then looked away. Oh, my friend, what have you gone through that being called moral nearly makes you weep? Or was it being called friend? Logan thought. He had been isolated for months in the hole and found it hell. Kylar had been isolated for his entire life. But? Kylar asked. Logan heaved a deep sigh. Not stupid either, are you? Kylar flashed that old mischievous grin, and Logan loved him fiercely. But you were a wet boy, Kylar, and now you're something even more dangerous. I can't claim that I don't know what you might do to Terra. Do you really trust me? Kylar interrupted. Logan paused, maybe for too long. Yes, he said finally. Then this conversation is finished.